Shus Rav. Can you hear me? Eicha Yashva Vadad, the opening phrases of Megillas Esther, of Megillas Eicha. On this, the Gemara says, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Vayishkoin, Hashem says, I said to you, Vayishkoin Yisrael, Betach Bodod in Yaakov. I said, what should be is that Yisrael should live, Betach, securely, Bodod, alone, in Yaakov, like Yaakov Avinu. But what happened was, instead, Eicha Yashva Vadod. That's what happened instead. That Yisrael, the Yushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, was Bodod, was alone. The Marashah explains on this. He says, there are two types of solitude. There's a solitude of awesomeness, and there's a solitude of revulsion. Klal Yisrael were secure. They were like a lion. Everyone keeps away from it. There was a person killed in Yerushalayim in the zoo by a lioness. A person keeps away from a lion. Klal Yisrael were like a lion. Everyone kept away from them. They had that type of solitude. Instead, now they sit a different type of solitude, the solitude of a leper. Bodod yeshev. They sit like a leper. Instead of that bodod, they exchange it for the bodod of a leper. The Ein Yaakov takes it slightly different. He says there's a solitude of a nation who have Hashem protecting them. Moshe Rabbeinu says about Klal Yisrael, Rochev Shamay Bezrecha, Hashem who rides in heavens is protecting you. When you have Hashem on your side, you don't need to turn to anybody else. But then Klal Yisrael lost their level of bitachon in Hashem. They turned to other nations, they turned to Mitzrayim and other nations, and these nations proved to be akone harotzut, like a broken reed, and they were left on their own. So they exchanged the badad, that badad, the solitude of being a nation who would rely solely on Hashem, for a different type of badad, the badad of a nation who have no one to turn to. Now, I just saw there was in front of me the sefer of someone called Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Huda Steinberg, I know from Eretz Yisrael, the Steinberg family, I believe. And he mentioned there are two lessons that this Gemara tells us. He says the first one is that if a person has to do the rotzen of Hashem, they will end up doing it one way or the other. The first way is by fulfilling the rotzen of Hashem, doing what Hashem wants of you. And the second way is that if a person doesn't, they will end up with Puronis, with punishment on them, and that will cause the Kiddush Hashem, Hashem showing that his Rotzen prevails, so that he will either do the Kiddush Hashem in the right way by doing the Rotzen Hashem, or by showing that you can't get away from the Rotzen Hashem. I want you to be Bodod in a positive way, but you refused, and now you are Bodod as a result of the punishment of Golus. As Rav Dessler writes about Nineveh, he says in 40 days Nineveh will be Nehepechis. Rashi says, it doesn't say Necherevis. Why does it say Nehepechis? Because either it will be Nepechis, they'll do teshuva, and there'll be a revolution, they'll be overturned in terms of their behavior, or it'll be Nepechis. Physically, it'll be turned over. One way or the other, they will either have to do it. Rabbi Kupitzer and Rochi used to say, a man's got to do what he's got to do. First of all, end up with that. And he was also fond of quoting the Shahar Tzion, who speaks about Nineveh and about Yonah. The message of Yonah is the following. It says that when Yonah went down into the whale and then he came up again, that symbolizes that if a person's then a Shomer doesn't do what Hashem wants them, when they come to this world, they will be put into the Kever and they will come back again in a Gilgul to do what Hashem wants of them. So that one way or the other, the persons will have to do what they're meant to do in the end, either one way or the other, through the right way or the wrong way. So that's a general message, that the Rotzen Hashem prevails, that we learn from this Gemara. But the second message, he says, which is more specifically about the aspect of Bodod, the idea that it's either the Klal Yisrael will willingly make themselves Bodod in one way, or Hashem will impose this Bodod upon them. And it's on this second idea which I would like to expand. This description of Klal Yisrael as being bodod, as being alone in solitude, is a very deep characteristic of who we are as a nation and what we have to do to survive. The same word bodod came up a few weeks ago in Parshas Balak. Can anyone tell me where? Where is the bodod in Parshas Balak? Exactly. Hein om lavodad yishkan, their nation who dwell alone. And this is an outsider. This is Bilam, an outsider, a non-Jew, describing Klal Yisrael as being bodad, a nation who lives alone. Uvagoyim lo yischashav, and are not counted amongst the goyim. The Or Gedalia, Rav Gedalia Shah, has an amazing insight on this. He starts with the Tarek of Yonason on this posuk, which says that because Klal Yisrael don't conduct themselves like with the nemusim with the goyim, so in that zechus they will be zocher, a goyim lo yischashav, they won't be counted amongst the nations, they will be zocher to the gula, where they alone will inherit the world. So the zechus of not following the nemusim of the goyim, therefore they will be zocher to the gula l'asid. He writes that in Vayishlach, the Or Gedalia explained that this quality of bodod is a maila that Klal Yisrael got from Yaakov Avinu. We know that the posuk, the same posuk starts, Meirot Surim Erin, I see this from the beginning, the rocks at the beginning, is talking about the Ovis. So that this maila of bodod comes from Yaakov Avinu. Because the posuk says about Yaakov, Vayivose Yaakov Levadoi. And this is not just an event, but it's a description of a quality of Yaakov Avinu. He was alone, he was attached to Hashem. Wherever he was attached, he went through with the closest to Hashem. And he wasn't influenced by those around him, so he could confront an Esav, he could confront a Lavan, and remain on his same Adriga. He was Levad, able to emerge unscathed from his contact with them. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu says the same thing about Klal Yisrael, which is the passage we started off with. Vayishkan Yisrael betach bodod ein Yaakov. Yaakov will dwell securely alone. Ein Yaakov, in the likeness of Yaakov Avinu. In other words, that the level of Yaakov was alone is something which we've inherited from Yaakov, which accompanies us throughout our lives and throughout the whole history of Klal Yisrael. And this is the main attribute of Klal Yisrael, which gives us, as the Targum says, the merit of Geula, that we did not go in the ways of the nations and we remained alone. And he writes, the Or Gedalia writes, that Chachamim were constantly concerned that we should keep up this Madriga. And they made gezeiros so that we should not mix together with the Ummas HaOlam. For example, with the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, those who do Daf Yomi, it's all talking about it's the Stam Yenom. Why they go on Yenom? Mishum Benozeim. It was a gezeira to a prevention from intermarriage, from assimilation. And so similarly, all the minhogim of Yisrael are ways of behaving to preserve the character, the tzura of Am Yisrael, so they should remain bodod, that they should remain alone. And he writes the pasuk in Devarim that says they are betach bodod. Why betach? Why secure? Because when Am Yisrael are alone, they're bodod. When they're separate from the goyim, then it's guaranteed that we will maintain our sanctity, our kedusha, and our characteristic of being a nation of Hashem. And throughout the generations, Chachamim put their necks on the line for this. They knew when they made, for example, the Gezerah of Stam Yenom, that it's going to cause anti-Semitism. Like the Gemara Megillah says, that Chachamim used this as their way of arousing anti-Semitism. The king touches the wine, you won't drink from it. They knew that, but they felt it was kedai to do so, because this is the secret of a hatzlacha, a success in preserving our nature as the nation who lives alone. And even the top Novi of the Ummas HaOlam, Bilam recognized this when he says, Hein om labodad yishkoin. And in that zechus, vagoim lo yischashav. Though this train of thought of the Or Gedalia is also found in the Meshech Chochem. This is the very famous Meshech Chochem, who speaks about people who say that Berlin is Yerushalayim, and he speaks about then a tempest will come and wash them away, and the people take this as a premonition of the events of the Holocaust. So the Meshech Chochem is commenting on the posuk at the end of the Tochacha in Bechukosai, where Hashem promises that even in the depths of their golas, He will not reject them and He will not break the covenant with them. The pasuk we all know of Af Gam Zois Biyosim Be'eretz Oyveim Lo Ma'astim Velo Galtim Lachalosam Lahav Habrisi Yitam Ki Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And on this, he says, the Rav Erech Simcha writes, when we look at our history and we see to the extent we can understand the ways of Hashgacha, we will observe that since Hashem has decreed in His wisdom that Klal Yisrael will go through many exiles, that same Chochma Elyona finds ways to keep Klal Yisrael surviving as a nation and not to assimilate. And says the Chachamim, the great Chachamim of our nation, the Gedolim, made fences, Gedorim, and restrictions so we can survive in the stormy tempest. This is his lashon, the stormy tempest of the Golas, so it shouldn't drown us in its raging torrents. He says, it goes back to Yaakov Avinu again. He says, Yaakov, why did Yaakov insist in Mitzrayim that they should carry him and take him back to Eretz Yisrael? He says, because he realized the small family of 70 people going down into what was the world power, the acme of everything great, Mitzrayim, they will very soon lose their identity. And that's why he told them they have to keep their clothes different, they have to keep different names. And that's why he insisted that he should be buried in Eretz Israel to keep up the national consciousness of his children and their children after them. They were only strangers in the land. They didn't go down to settle in Mitzrayim, as we say in the Haggadah, but just Lagur, something to stay there. And they shouldn't see themselves as citizens in Mitzrayim. And that's why Yosef commanded his children, Pokod Yivkoid Eschem, Hashem will remember you. And he told his brothers, and the brothers said the same to the Chayyus. It was like a catchword, and Pokod Yivkoid Hashem will remember you. They should realize that they were left rooted in the hearts of Am Yisrael, that this place where they were in Mitzrayim is not their place. I had an uncle who was Nifter a few years ago, and he lived in England. He went to Israel, then he went to end up in America. And his children, he wasn't happy with the way his children were turning out. So he actually went to live in Israel. It didn't work out in the end, but he went there. And one of the reasons he went there was he wanted them to have in the consciousness that this is America. It's not our place. Israel is our place. And he went there, although it didn't work out, but to impress that upon his children. This is something which he got, you know, from Yaakov Avinu. And the Meshech Chochma writes that Ezra also learned from this. There are 18 gezeiros that Chazal made. You find them in the end of the first parak of Shabbos. And they're all to separate Klal Yisrael from the Umos HaOlam. And the Gemara says about these gezeiros, discussing, does a Beis Din have the koyach to mevatel an earlier Beis Din? The Gemara says that even if Eliyahu HaNavi and his Beis Din would come along and want to mevatel these gezeiros, they couldn't do so. And he says, why dark Eliyahu HaNavi? Because Eliyahu HaNavi comes at the end of the Golos. It's to telling you that however long Klal Yisrael and Golos, you can never take away these gezeiros, because they are the essential gezeiros to keeping Klal Yisrael away from the Umos HaOlam. Now going back to Rav Gedalia Shor, he writes that when we see that Klal Yisrael don't keep that surah of that characteristic to be alone of Badad, then the Hashkoch HaProtis arranges that they will be distanced by the Goyim. Min HaShemayim there arises, and he quotes the pasuk in Tehillim Kuf Hei, Hofach Libom Lisnoi Es Amo. He changed their hearts to hate the people. How the Klal Yisrael went to Mitzrayim, and then Hashem tweaked the hearts of the Mitzrayim to hate Klal Yisrael. Hashem brings about events that the Goyim will hate Klal Yisrael, because if Klal Yisrael doesn't protect itself and preserve that characteristic of Badad, then the Hashgacha does so against their will. And this brings to mind the famous words of Rav Chaim Volozhiner, when the Yid doesn't make Kiddush finish off, then the Goy makes Havdalah. However, he says, the main Rotzon of Hashem is not that. The Rotzon of Hashem is that we, of our own good will and accord, should keep ourselves separate from the Goy. By keeping the characteristics of Badad, that brings us closer to the redemption, as the Targum says. And he finishes off with amazing words. He says that we are living in the times of the Ikvus of the Mashiach. So it's upon us, more than all the previous stories, to strengthen ourselves, to keep that Surah of Klal Yisrael, and to be a nation who dwells alone. And through that, he says, we'll be merit the Gula. Maybe that's why the Nisayin and our Dor is so difficult, because that's what we've got to strengthen ourselves in. So that for everyone there, we're so bombarded on all sides. Maybe that's why, that because Hashem wants us to have the Chus, that will bring the Gedula. Now, these words of Or Gedalia, for me, set our situation in context. The events of the last 22 months have been so bruising, so painful, so filled, and continue to be filled with Yogan and Anocha. But these events are not because of Hamas or Netanyahu or the Attorney General or even Trump or even Starmer. They're because of the Hashkocha Elyona, a part of which is Hofach Libom Lisno Esamoy. It is Rachamim, Hashem isn't giving up on us. He wants the Am Lavodad Yishko, and the nation, to be separate. And the Eicha Yoshva Vadad, the negative way, is how he brings this about, even if it means dragging us there by our lapels. And as the Meshech Chochma explains, this pasuk says, V'af Gamzois B'yosem V'eretz Oivem, he says, the Giul and the Mius, the rejection and the expulsions, are because, as the pasuk finishes, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, because I am your God, I have a personal connection with you, I don't give up on you, and I make sure that throughout the Golos I bring Klal Yisrael back to me. It's not a total rejection, but rather to preserve us as the nation worthy of these amazing things that he will do for us, Ba'achris Hayomim. That's what he writes. About the time when I read these words from Gedalia Shor, someone sent me an article. It's by the son of somebody who davens in St. John's Wood Shul. It's a shul I know well, my son Naftali knows well, because my parents are Aleichem Shalom, they daven there. It's a big shul, very aristocratic shul. It's full of wealthy people, professionals, academics, people who have made it. They have a strong Jewish identity, but they really made it in this Malchus Shel Chesed of England. And one of these men there, he writes an article that his son wrote. And I'll read out to you parts, excerpts of this article. He writes, "I always wanted to go to Glastonbury. For years it had been on the list. The music, the madness, the myth. Last year I finally made it, complete with camper van and kosher barbecue. I fell in love with the chaos and the joy, the conversations with strangers, the music that throbbed through the ground and up into your chest. I went back this year for more of the same. But something shifted and I'm not going back. This isn't about one band or one tweet or one awkward moment. It's about the quiet but growing realization that for Jews like me, observant, visible, connected to both Jewish identity and to British civic life, Glastonbury no longer feels like a safe or welcoming place. And that says something deeply worrying about where British culture is heading. Glastonbury offers something rare, anonymity. In real life, I wear a kippah, serve as a governor of a Jewish school, and as a lay leader in my synagogue. I spent years in Jewish education, but I've also spent 3 days in Ramallah with my MBA class. I sit proudly at the intersection of Jewish tradition and British public life. I love my life as a proud British Jew. At Glastonbury, I could just exist. I was the guy with the football shirt, not the Jew. I wandered, I chatted, it was utopia for a while. But then something changed. Kneecap, a band whose lyrics glorify IRA violence and whose Glastonbury set included chants of Brits out and hostility towards the IDF. Their platforming wasn't a fringe act in a hidden field, it was a headline moment, endorsed by the Glasto elite, legitimised by the BBC and cheered on by a crowd that blurred political provocation into cultural incitement. I opted out, quietly. Many of my new festival friends and acquaintances were going to see them. I just said I wasn't. No explanation, no argument. But I could feel something shift. The conversation cooled. Messages went unanswered. A friend gently suggested we move bars after a donation drive for Free Palestine made the atmosphere uncomfortable. We never discussed politics, but she knew and she cared. Later that night, I checked my phone for the first time in days, and reality came rushing in. Online, I saw tweets calling to find the Zionists and make them feel unsafe. The comments on the Jewish influencer posts were filled with anti-Semitic bile. Suddenly, my bright yellow Brazil shirt felt like a yellow star. I didn't want to be seen. Earlier, I'd had a strange encounter, sitting at the front of the stage before Ezra Collective. I looked it up. It's not a tzedakah drive for a Jewish youth group. It's a band. And after a brief chat about nothing, a woman said casually, "Oy vey." It was so out of place, it felt like a test. She said, "That's Yiddish." I asked her, "Are you Jewish?" "No," she said flatly. I felt it in my bones. "We see you, Jew." I thought back to the sunrise. I'd been there a few hours when I thought I heard it. A boo, then a hiss, then a muttered slur. Zionists. That creeping uncertainty, am I safe here, is the defining emotion I've been left with. It wasn't one big thing, it was accumulation of tiny signals, looks, silences, absences, a vibe, the opposition of belonging. He concludes, I spent most of my adult life working across communities, building bridges, helping young people engage with difficult truths. I've always believed in dialogue, in nuance, in British values. But now I find myself asking a question I've only ever half joked about. If the worst were to happen, would the people around me hide me? Would they stay silent? Or would they point? Or worse? I don't want to be dramatic. I just want to tell the truth as I experience it. I went to Glastonbury looking for joy. I found it. But I also found something else. A quiet, creeping fear that no longer feels irrational. So goodbye, friends. I don't blame you. Maybe it's just me, but I'm not coming back. So I read this article and I thought, this man has learnt the hard way. When the Jew doesn't make Kiddush, the Goy makes Havdalah. And then I thought again, it's very easy to look at someone else who I would describe as being well to the left of myself on the spectrum of Frumkeit, on the Richter scale of Judaism. And to smugly say he's learnt, when the Jew doesn't make Kiddush, then the Goy makes Havdalah. But are I really, in my life, making Kiddush as well? That is the question. You know, sometimes you meet an old Yid. Let's say for argument, you go to Maksi Kedas and it's a Mashulach Mishulayim. His whole essence is completely different. He's just imbued with feelings of Hashkocha, Emunah, Bitocha, and with Torah values. You just sense that he's on a different plane. You offer him a lift. The two of you walk back to your car and you're frantic trying to remember what you've been learning so you can talk to him about something sensible that he'll relate to. You clear the coke hands from beneath his feet as he gets in. And when you turn on the engine, on comes the radio, 5 Live. And you wonder what he's thinking. You just realise he's somewhere else. His whole frame of reference is a different world. It's not my world, it's a different world. They mix from the goyim, they learn from the deeds. It's not just the guy in Glastonbury, it's me. You know, I started off with a passage from Or Gedaliah about the Maila of Am Yisrael as Hein Om Lavodah Yishkoin. I came across it because I was asked a question. I was preparing a shiur because someone asked me, are you allowed to go and have a drink in a pub? It's a very relevant question. Summer holidays are coming. I'm not going to go into it, the Torah of this, because we can learn on Tisha B'Av about the Churban of Golos and its causes and matters connected to it. But going, the halachos of going to a pub are not part of it. It's on Torah Way if you want to know. But here's an example of what we're talking about. Leaving aside the strict halacha, here's another question. Do we see ourselves as being apart from or a part of the world around us? And are we bringing up our children to be apart from or a part of that world? Where we go on holiday, where we go and how we behave during the year, is this leading us to a situation where our children and our grandchildren will be closer to Hein Om Lavodah Yishkoin or closer to Vayilmudu Maseihem, that they learn from the Goyim, because they're mixed and they learn from the Goyim? We live in times when the muscular secular society, as the head of Ofsted once described themselves, is making inroads. To the extent that even when I speak now, I'm not having illusions of grandeur, but I do fleetingly wonder what would happen if my words would get into the wrong circles. I wonder whether, going to my restaurant or going to the next cell, would I have my visa refused to come back to England because I'm an extremist? It's not easy to bring up children with a straight view on life and a wholehearted and wholesome acceptance of the whole of the Torah. What is moulding the Hashkofas Hachayim of our children? Is it the Mesillas Yeshorim? Is it the Rambam? Is it the Chovos HaLevavos? Or is it the bureaucrats in Whitefield? Or more likely, the social media gurus? I remember many years ago being annoyed at somebody who told me, he said, it was Rav Victor Grossberger, and I was annoyed, but he was right. He said, do you know who designs our wives' titles? He said, it's Lady Diana. And I didn't like it, but he had a point. He was right. I want to finish off with a little anecdote. One of my sons lives in Afula. There are many Arabs in the area, and Baruch Hashem, they're mostly friendly. My son went to a hardware store to get a border for his Zeichel HaChurban. He started trying to explain to this Arab what he wanted. And the man interrupted him and said, do you want Chazon Ish or Rav Chaim Noe? So then they got talking, and the shopkeeper asked him a bit more what it was all about. He explained that we have it as a reminder of the temple, of the Beis HaMikdash. He said, yes, but what do you do with it? He said, nothing, it's just there. He said, well, I don't understand, what is it? He said, well, we come in, and we go out, and we see it, and we think about the Beis HaMikdash. And the Arab stopped and thought, and he said, you know, you're going to win. That was his reaction. So Tisha B'Av is a time when we take a step back. We raise our musogim to a different plane, to be worried and be distressed about the Churban, as the very first sif in the Shulchan Aruch, which is the code of how every Jew should live, says. It says, Yirei Shemaim should be Yorei Metzeg ala Churban. The Gerer Rebbe said, and surely Kal V'Chomer, someone who's not a Yirei Shemaim, should be Metzeg ala Churban. He says, because you can't kid yourself. He says that you can't kid yourself. If you don't feel that, don't kid yourself that you're Yirei Shemaim. You have to have Yirei Shemaim to feel the loss of the Churban. So what does someone who's not a Yirei Shemaim do? So Rav Volber says he should be Meitzel Doeg, that he hasn't got the Yirei Shemaim to really feel the Churban. A little bit like the story of there was a soldier after the liberation of the Kosel, when he went there and everyone around him was crying And he couldn't understand why they were crying. And then he suddenly realized, there's something missing. There's something missing from me. And he started crying, that he realized there was something missing from him. So crying that even if I don't understand what the Chorban is, I understand that there's something missing from my life. So this is a time when we forget about our own ambitions, our own difficulties and our successes. And we focus on a place, the only place in the world, Beshato, where the Shekhinah filled the building, and where you could tap into the purity of a world which is something like the world before the chait of Adam Rishon. Tisha B'Av is not the end of that elevated train of thoughts. Rav Volbe writes that the whole year can be described in a cycle of Richuk and Kiruv. He says that we start with Rosh Hashanah, which is the time with Bria Sa'olam, and then we go through the Galuyos, through the winter, through Purim and Hanukkah. And then we come to Pesach, which is the beginning of Am Yisrael and Matan Torah. And then we come to the tragedies of the Churban Habayis, of the Chet Egel and the Chet HaMeraglim. And these are times of Richuk. And so we come to the time of ultimate Richuk. And just like when you have a couple, and one thinks everything's fine, and the other one realizes it's not, then with the time when that person realizes it's not fine, it starts to do something about it. That's the moment of Kiruv, because from that Richuk, you realize that there's something you've got to do about it, and you start working more towards Kiruv. So therefore, he says that Tisha B'Av is not the end of that elevated train of thought. It's the beginning of the Shiva de Nechemta. These Sheva Haftorias, which all herald the time when our long journey will come to its end. And those Sheva Haftorias bring us right to Rosh Hashanah, when we stand in awe and we daven for the Malchus Shemayim to be revealed. And to the extent that we can be misabel on the Churban Habayis during the 3 weeks, that's how the extent we can feel Malchus Shemayim and daven for it with real kavanah. If we can take into the year a little more feeling in all the parts of the Tefillah which speak about Yerushalayim and the Gula, so many places in our Tefillah we ask about it, and we can bring into our lives a little more tzipis of Yeshua, a little more ahavas chinam, and a little bit less sinas chinam and loshon hara, and a stronger connection to our mission as Hein Om Labodo Yishkon, then we can hope that this Moed Tisha B'Av will see the fulfillment of the Pasuk, Atos Tokum Terachem Tzion, Ki Eis Achenu Kivo Moed.